This is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
Forgot to look up double time in another language, so dupla tempo.
This
tempo.
Is no ordinary pod. No ordinary pod.
This is how you start a Sunday evening podcast, emergency podcast. It is 5:16, Sunday, July 7th, and we are here to record a podcast. Let's just get right to it. This is, I don't know how long this is going to go. We don't have an hour time limit for this. If it goes over an hour, then I'm going to be really hungry after this, after the podcast. If not, then I'll be mildly hungry. Either way, Noah, how are you doing on this Sunday evening?
Doing really well. I went home Friday night, which is in St. John's, just south of Jacksonville, and was there all day Saturday, hung out with the fam, and then had to be at work at 10:30 this morning, so got up at 6, drove over, almost saw a ridiculous... Listen to what I saw on the interstate coming back. I was driving in the left lane, you know, going 83 or so, you know, and then all of a sudden I see all these, like, clothes and, like, valuable items in the middle of the road. And I'm like, okay, there's less of these in the right lane. So I got into the right lane so I could go over the top of them. And I drive probably another 100, 150 yards. And the car, I assume it's the car that it fell off of. I don't know if it was like a trash bag full of clothes or if it was like a suitcase or whatever. But that car was in the left lane going backwards.
What?
Yeah, they were going backwards in reverse. And then all of a sudden I look in my mirror and I just see cars just spewing off left and right trying to avoid this car. So I watched probably a pretty big pileup happen on I-10.
Oh, an accident came from it?
I think so. I can neither confirm nor deny, but I think so. But other than that, I got to leave work early because we got some pretty cloudy skies here in Tallahassee. So, yeah, how's everything going down on your end?
We got some of those too. We got it's been cloudy and rainy all day, so perfect day. It's a perfect Sunday in my book. But my sleep schedule is still all over the place. I'm going to bed, falling asleep at 9 o'clock, waking up at 12:45. Every light in the house is on. I'm in my work clothes, haven't showered. Then I have to make the decision, do I want to be up for another hour? I don't want to deal with this in the morning. And it usually is deal with it in the morning, which means I set an alarm at 5 o'clock in the morning. So then I'm up from 5 to 9 and then at sleep, it's just all over the place. And today is no different. Even on weekends, I don't even remember what time I went to bed. Don't remember what time I woke up. I've just been up for probably 12 hours, writing all day. And then now I get to talk to you. Very easily can run through this podcast because a lot of stuff happened. And Friday night around 4 a.m. Eastern time, Kawhi Leonard signed with the Clippers. And then 10, 15 minutes after that, Woj announced that the Clippers traded... I'll go look at all the picks in a second. Just the most impressive amount of first-round picks, most likely... Definitely in the NBA, probably the biggest overhaul in sports. To the Oklahoma City Thunder. Oh, along with Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Danilo Gallinari. To the Oklahoma City Thunder for Paul George. Giving the Clippers, Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, and a lot of the key components back from a team last year that went... They were the 7 seed. No, they were the 8 seed. Took the Warriors 6 games. So, where do you want to start with this note? There's a lot of different ways we can go this. We talk about all Clippers. We could talk to the Lakers. Talk about what this means for the whole NBA. I'm sure we'll get into all of it, but where do you want to start? Could go Russell Westbrook. I'll leave it to you.
I just got one question to kind of kick us off. And I have an answer. I don't know if you'll have one off the top of your head. You said this might be the biggest trade in terms of like draft capital that we may have seen in sports.
Yes.
Can you think of anything... that has ever, anything, any other trade that's been to this magnitude in any other sport? Because I have one that instantly comes to mind.
Basketball, I know it's all sports, but basketball, the first thing that comes to mind is the Celtics-Nets trade. But the Celtics didn't end up doing anything with that, really, besides a couple conference finals appearances, which is kind of funny. And now, look, Brooklyn has KD and Kyrie. But the NFL, I'm trying to think. Was it the RG3 trade?
No, that's up there, though.
Okay, who are you thinking of? Wentz?
Nope. Got to go farther back, bro. The 1999 fifth overall pick so that the Saints could get Ricky Williams.
Was that that was the McNabb year, right?
I think so. That sounds about right.
But what are you talking about, the Ricky Williams trade?
Yeah, it was a first-round pick, third-round pick, fourth-round pick, fifth-round pick, sixth-round pick, seventh-round pick, all in 1999. Plus,
I'm looking this up on Wikipedia,
first round pick for next year, and the 2000 third round pick for the following year, and that 2000 first round pick, the following year was a second overall pick.
LeVar Arrington from Penn State. I'm looking at it now. Wow, and you know what's crazy? Is that if I read you the names, Cade McNown, Dwayne Bates, Nate Stimson, Kari Samuel, Desmond Clark, Billy Miller, LeVar Arrington, and Lloyd Harrison, would you rather have those names or Ricky Williams?
Exactly.
Which kind of means that whoever gets the star wins the trade regardless. So, back to you. Where do you want to start? Before we get into this, shout out to the U.S. Women's National Soccer Team, bringing home the World Cup, second in a row, fourth overall. Very comfortable win today. VAR, clap. Hopefully the men can get the Gold Cup tonight, but even if they do win, it should not overshadow what the ladies have done. I think they've won 12 straight World Cup matches, which is crazy. Now, let's celebrate this, have your parade in New York, and let's get the gold medal next year in 2020. We don't strive for greatness. That's what LeBron says. By the way, did you see the commercial? You probably didn't see the commercial after the game.
It was a really cool, I have not.
Really cool Nike commercial right after the game. But I don't really have any deep analysis for that. Sorry. So let's move on to Noah. Where do you want to start? Once again.
I want to start with how Kawhi signing with the Clippers changes everything. Actually, you texted me about what the Toronto Raptors offered and how that could have played out. So I kind of want to see what your thoughts are on Kawhi not going to the Raptors and going to the Clippers. And also, do you know the trade offer differences between the Raptors in OKC and the Clippers in OKC?
Let me double. I'm like 99% sure. Let me double check real quick because I know. To answer the Toronto aspect of not the trade, but to answer the why Kawhi did not go to Toronto, he told Nick Nurse that he just wanted to go home. That he did what he could. He wanted to go home, and Nick Nurse, the head coach of Toronto Raptors, came forth and said, you know, you can't blame Kawhi for leaving for the Clippers. It's a great opportunity for him. It's home. It just crosses a lot of boxes. Checks a lot of boxes for him. And then what they offered him, I think it was a package of Pascal Siakam, Fred VanVleet, and then like four or five unprotected first-round picks. And Toronto's like, nope. Cool with that, because if you look at Toronto's books, Gasol, Lowry, Ibaka, and VanVleet are all on expiring contracts. So they could get like two or three first-round picks at the end of the year, which will give them more capital to build their team around, build around Siakam, build around Anunoby, depending on who would have been available for them, who is going to be available for them, and who's going to need like a Gasol. And so, like, Gasol came in and not turned the tide, but was a massive upgrade over Valanciunas and was an instrumental part to them winning the title. So that happened once. Maybe a team tries to get Gasol again. So the Clippers deal was better, and the Clippers had to do it because it's either we lose Kawhi to the Lakers, and watch them become a dynasty that runs through the league, or we get rid of our future assets and draft pick allocation, get rid of SGA, get off of Gallinari, and say, okay, Kawhi and Paul George for this amount of capital is worth it in our eyes.
And, I mean, that is, it was, I didn't want to see Kawhi go to the Lakers. But now this really brings a lot of various two-headed monsters across the NBA. It seems as if every star has a superstar at his side in most of the contending teams. And if there isn't like two stars, there's at least a star and then a lot of solid role players around. I'd say the only exception would be to this rule would be like the Jazz. Because I wouldn't say the Jazz have like a star player, but they have a bunch of solid... I mean, Donovan Mitchell, yes, but not to the level of where these other... Like where we have Paul George, James Harden, people of that nature. So it's interesting to see like the balance that is starting to be created in the NBA. So my question to you is, how does this... Because we, you know, we chopped it up as if Kawhi was going to the Clippers, I want to say, last week when we talked about it.
This past week we talked about... We did the pod under the impression he was going to the Lakers. And then... Because that's what everyone was saying. I guess... And if no one matters because it wasn't Woj reporting, and Woj kept saying Clippers are the favorite. So,
because I know we're not necessarily into big lists or anything or rankings, but we had Lakers, Jazz, Clips, Nugs, Golden State, OKC.
Mm-hmm. I think we had the Clippers behind Utah. Under the assumption that they would just be getting Kawhi and not getting Paul George, but now I feel like it's just in the West. The thing is that even in the West, the Lakers and Clippers have they have like four of the six best players, however you want to slice it up. But then, like you were saying, with dominant role players, Denver has a superstar in Jokic, and then a star, and then a bunch of blooming stars. Portland has a star backcourt. Houston, when they want to be, has a superstar and aging star and perfect role players for them. You mentioned Utah. OKC's done. I'm just going to do last year's standings as I go through this. Clippers have two superstars. Lakers have two superstars. This is an exciting time in the West. And it's been competitive before, but it's always been, you know, it's going to be Golden State. Now... We can make case for a lot of teams last week. Now we can make a case for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 teams to come out of one conference alone.
And how does this? Because I'm assuming we didn't talk about it on the pod. It didn't seem as if it was circulating in any NBA Twitter or anything that Paul George was going to get shipped to the Clippers in a combo deal with Kawhi.
Yeah, I think from what I've read is that Kawhi met with Paul George and said, "Hey, you forced your way to the Clippers. I'll sign there. Let's not go be buddy buddy with LeBron. Let's do our own thing. Let's go back home to where we're from and play and bring a title to a fan base that has never come close to one. Never been to a conference finals." So Paul George did that a couple days ago. I think a week ago he went to Oklahoma City. Him and his agent said, "Hey, we want out. We want to get traded to the Clippers." And then that's when the Oklahoma City offered that package of Russell Westbrook and Paul George for all those draft picks just to get off of cap space. And the interesting thing then would have been, would Kawhi have stayed in Toronto still? Because Toronto would have been making that deal without the assumption that. Without the 100% foregone conclusion of Kawhi re-signing at Toronto. But it just turned out that he wanted to go home. He found someone. He wanted to go to the Clippers all along, so that information was right the whole season. It's just free agency started drying up, and Jimmy Butler was gone, and there was no one really else out there for them to a choir. So then he turned to Paul George, said, "Hey, Paul George, could you come here?" I mean, who knows? Maybe this has all been in just written in stone since the end of the playoffs. And Kawhi and Paul George have been texting. But player empowerment once again. The LeBron model came back to bite LeBron in the face. Not in the to, but you could tell it's a Sunday afternoon, Sunday night pod. Came back to bite him in the back. And LeBron, I mean, the thing is, LeBron can't complain. He has Anthony Davis. He has Boogie Cousins, who's now another year removed from the injuries, and maybe he can get back to as close to full strength as possible. They re-signed Danny Green. They signed Danny Green 2 years, $28 million. Little too much for my taste. But he's a valuable role player. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, JaVale McGee, and Rajon Rondo are all back. You signed Jared Dudley, who can play 3-5, small ball, good locker room guy. Troy Daniels, spot-up shooter. Jared Dudley's a shooter. My favorite guy, Alex Caruso. And you have Quinn Cook. And I kind of like the Lakers team, man. How are you feeling between the team I just read to you and then Paul George, Kawhi Leonard, Patrick Beverley, Mo Harkless, Lou Williams, Ivica Zubac, Montrezl Harrell, Ronnie McGregor, Jerome Robinson, Landry Shamet, and then hopefully to be Kevin Gelly and Terrence Mann? Like, which one of those two lineups are you leaning towards?
I'm leaning towards the Clippers, actually, for the reason of the youth that Paul George and Kawhi have over LeBron, and primarily speaking. But the teetering point for me, and it's something that I emphasize more so talking about NBA Finals preview and whatnot, was defense. Patrick Beverley is one of the nastiest defenders in the league. Mm-hmm. And having him being able to take, I know Golden State's not going to be obviously nearly as powerful as they once were, but having him being able to maybe chase Steph around and having him go one-on-one, but not having to worry about going on the flip end of the court and having to put up max numbers because you have Paul George and Kawhi. We were texting back and forth too yesterday about the Terrence Mann, Kevin Gelly combo that is going to be happening. And I think those two coming off the bench together is such a smart move because we were talking about that yesterday. And I didn't watch any summer league, but I saw a highlight
You're not missing much.
I know, that's what I heard. But I saw a highlight of Mann ooping it to Kevin Gelly. And that just reminded me of like, oh, that's right. That's what Florida State basketball does best is run in transition and play great team off. FSU was at their best when they were playing team-oriented offensive basketball. That can be said for a lot of teams, but Florida State in particular. Mm-hmm. And being able to watch those two with NBA coaching and NBA spacing is going to be a lot of fun because Terrence Mann he kind of reminds me, like, tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like he has a very kind of similar playing style to Kyle Lowry.
Not as good as a shooter, but he thrives in like a chaotic environment where everything's sped up, but he's sped up, but he's never out of control. And he's a hustler, and he makes the right cuts, right decisions. Like, he plays the right way. It looks erratic sometimes. When his shot's on, he can score 25 points. He doesn't look to do that often. But he's just going to give you solid minutes. He's going to make the right plays. He's going to be where he's supposed to be and all that type of thing. That's a great comparison. Although, man is a couple inches taller and bigger. But Lowry plays a lot bigger than his size. And just the fact that, you know, coming off the bench that they drafted – NBA-ready players now. Kevin Gelly's an NBA-ready player now. Like, I would like to see him playing over Zubac. He can play over Zubac in the playoffs. He can play later down the line because Zubac's still going to start, and then Harrell's going to be coming off the bench as the big. Harrell can play with Kevin Gelly. Kevin Gelly can space the floor. They can do a lot of different things. That's a good defensive duo, too. I love those two together, like you said, coming off the bench. I love that team in general. But I think that, you know, as far as you know, making up for lost time, you know, right when that deal, the Kawhi deal was announced, Lakers just signed a bunch of people really quickly. And LeBron, AD, spacing the floor with Kuzma and, you know, take your pick of KCP, Danny Green, Caruso, Cook, spreading, Troy Daniels spreading the floor. This is the most space LeBron will probably, let's be close to the most space LeBron's ever had to operate since he had Mike Miller and Rashard Lewis and Chris Bosh and Mario Chalmers with them. So that's going to help LeBron age a little bit better this year. And the fact that he has AD. AD is the youngest player in amongst the four between LeBron, Kawhi, PG, and AD. He's the youngest, and he's probably the second or third best defender. Top three MVP, top three defensive player of the year. Like, I feel like some people, I'm not saying you, I'm just like people are sleeping on how great Anthony Davis is. And him now getting, the best player he's played with is Jrue Holiday. He's now playing with LeBron, who's a step up. Anthony Davis is still in his prime. I think these two teams are going to be meeting in the playoffs, and I hope it's not in a first round scenario where one team takes more time off and stuff like that. And the other thing is, Kawhi has injury history. He's going to have to get load management. Paul George is missing the beginning of the season. Double shoulder surgery. How healthy are those two going to be? Do you trust as a perfect transition to an athletic training question, do you trust Paul George and Kawhi Leonard being healthy in April, May, June versus LeBron, Anthony Davis being healthy? Because you mentioned LeBron's age. So I'm just interested to hear your thoughts on that. Like, who will be fresher and in better health than come playoff time?
That's kind of tough to say exactly who's going to be fresher because there are just so many variables that go into it with load management, how well each team's benches are playing, other kind of minute injuries and how they're handled between the sports medicine staffs. But if I had to just take my best guess, I would say LeBron and AD are going to be in better health than Paul George and Kawhi. Just because I just feel like LeBron's on a different level than the rest of the NBA in terms of being in tune with his body. And Anthony Davis is the youngest of the four of them. That's just what I would go with. I think it's going to be close, and it's dependent upon like what small injuries come about, because it's hard to go a full NBA season without getting hurt, even if you're on load management, whether it's an ankle here or there, a knee sprain of some sort, lower back injuries, things of that nature. So it's kind of it's tough. That's a tough question to answer. Exactly.
Yeah, not the best question to ask. I was just wondering because it's going to be attrition. It's all about, you know, a lot of the times it's about the healthiest team wins. And we can't predict the Achilles and the ACLs and stuff like that. But, you know, lingering injuries, Paul George, he has a lot of injury history. Kawhi has quad issues, ankle issues. And LeBron just has the groin, although he's lapped everyone in minutes. And AD has nagging injuries that keep him out. But nagging injuries to AD means he's putting up 27, 12, and 6 instead of, you know, 30, 14, and 8. So, I mean, you said Clippers. Are the Clippers, so you, out of the West, you're going with the Clippers. So very quickly, I already answered this. I think you answered the Clipper part two. Who do you have coming out of the West right now, and is the trade worth it for the Clippers?
Trade is worth it for the Clippers because you're in LA and like the Lakers have been awful for years, as you know. So the fact, man, that's so obnoxious, man. The fact that, you know, LeBron's going to be selling tickets because now they have the teammates around that he wants. On a business standpoint, it's nice that the Clippers also are going to be able to sell tickets because they are going to have two awesome superstar duos. I don't think I'm taking either of those teams to make the finals.
Oh, man. Utah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. They're fun. They're fun.
It's just like that defense is going to be so nasty. And it's like, yeah, you can take the Golden State route and be like, all right, we're just going to try to score more points than you. But it's work smarter, not harder. We're just going to prevent you from scoring points. And then we don't have to score that many.
I am massively intrigued by Utah. I'm intrigued by Denver if Michael Porter Jr. gets healthy. And if you,
that's huge.
If Jamal Murray can take the next step. Portland improved their wings, and they got Hassan Whiteside. I'm not saying that's an improvement, but, you know, Whiteside, Kanter, you know, sometimes you got to take risks. Golden State, if Klay comes back earlier than expected, you still got Steph. You got D'Angelo. You got Draymond there. If they can stay afloat, they're a dangerous lower half seed team. I mean, there's so many avenues to this West. But one team we know is not a title contender, and that's Oklahoma City Thunder. And they've been trying to offload Steven Adams since before the draft. They want to get his bad contract off the books. Now they tried to trade Russell Westbrook, package him with Paul George. They want to go all in with the rebuild. So you should expect Russell Westbrook, whose team has already talked to the Sam Presti in their front office, expect Steven Adams. You can expect Danilo Gallinari to get immediately flipped. But this team has a war chest of draft picks. They have some nice contracts. So the question is, I'm going to ask, I don't want to go too introspective of that because this is just a quick reaction pod. Where do you want to see Russell Westbrook end up? And let's hope it's realistic.
I want to see him go east.
Okay.
The rumor
teams are the Heat, the Pistons, and the Rockets. Those three have emerged as of now.
Reuniting him with James Harden would be a lot of fun. Because I think James Harden might be able to appreciate Russell Westbrook more now that he had to deal with Chris Paul. Because obviously Chris Paul and James Harden do not really get along, at least on the basketball court. It doesn't seem as if they mesh as well as they would have hoped.
They look great in the State Farm commercials.
They do. But
Oscar from The Office too. All right, so just interject real quick. So who do you think Westbrook would be an upgrade over Chris Paul?
Yeah.
You think, okay, so do you think one ball is enough for Russ and James Harden?
I think so, yeah. I think they could figure it out.
So,
because okay. I think James Harden, I don't think he trusted Chris Paul. I think he doubts Chris Paul's athleticism and doubts his ability to shine big in big games. But that's like the antithesis of Russell Westbrook. Like Russell Westbrook.
No, go ahead, finish your thought.
He messes up a lot, but his athleticism, pound for pound, is top two, top three in the NBA, if not number one. And just being a pure athlete. Yes, he's got the knee injuries, and health concerns are always an issue, but could James Harden try and play a closer role to what Klay Thompson does with Steph Curry?
That's the thing. I don't know. Him in Houston, depending on what, like who, in that scenario, Houston has to offload Chris Paul right back, and if that's the case of Sam Presti, do you think the Westbrook asset or the Chris Paul asset or Chris Paul can net you more? And I'd have to think it's Westbrook, and I don't even know if either of them will net you a lot because I don't know what the market's going to be. He's making $47 million in 4 years, not next year, or the year after, in the fourth season, the fourth and final deal season. So you have to have someone absorb that cap space and that wants to have a win now philosophy and that aligns with the contracts of the players on the team. Houston, unless they want to go forward with a Westbrook-Harden duo and, like, enjoying your philosophy of having two superstars, that's one way to look at it. The other teams mentioned, Pistons, I mean, that's trainer heaven. If you're a trainer, you want to get work, you go to Detroit, and you get the work of Blake Griffin's knees and Russell Westbrook's knees, and now Derrick Rose's knees, who's signed there already, so that's another team. I like the Heat. The teams I want are the two Florida teams. I think the Heat with Jimmy Butler, they don't have any picks really to trade. They put together, Justice Winslow, maybe not Bam, but Justice Winslow and a couple expiring deals, and you get Russell Westbrook, and then you have Westbrook-Butler. That's a nice duo, and they're two guys who just enjoy having fun. They have plenty of off-court interests. Miami's a great place to be. And then the other side of things is Orlando. And I wrote an article about this. Orlando has a gaping hole at point guard. Had it for years. Didn't solve it this offseason. But what they did solve this offseason is their plan is out. They want to contend and make playoffs now. Made the sixth seed last year, first time since 2012 they made the playoffs. Made it this year, have an all-star. Doubled down, signed him, signed Vucevic and Terrence Ross to four-year deals. Westbrook has 4 years left on his contract. So the fake trade I made is Evan Fournier, who has, do not Google him, who has 3 years, 17, 3 years and $17 million per year on his left on his deal. Markelle Fultz, Mo Bamba, and a first-round pick in 2021, top like 25 protected. And if that doesn't happen, it rolls over to 2022, top like 3 or 5 protected. So in this case, Westbrook gets his own team, a team that I think is maybe not as talented as the Thunder teams he's played on, but fits him better. There's better shooting. Vucevic is a lot better player than Steven Adams. You have young talent, Aaron Gordon, him running in transition with Aaron Gordon and Jonathan Isaac flanking him. That's great. DJ Augustine shoots over 45% from three on catch and shoot. Aaron Gordon shoots 36% on catch and shoot threes. A closing lineup of Westbrook, Terrence Ross, Isaac, Gordon, Vucevic, maybe even go small, throw Isaac Gordon at the 4 and 5, bring add Augustine there. There's a bunch of options. I mean, I think that's a 4 seed in this year with Brooklyn struggling. We don't know what Boston's going to do. Indiana's going to be slow at the gates with injuries. If Westbrook went there, that could be a 3 seed. Oklahoma City's going to trade Adams, get more cap space, get more assets back, if whatever they can. Mo Bamba's their future guy. So you have SGA, you have Mo Bamba, you build around there, and you get great draft picks, and you keep drafting well, which you've always done. Orlando gets Westbrook, Vucevic, and Terrence Ross on the same time span. When those 4 years are done, you're about to be paying Jonathan Isaac, and Aaron Gordon's going to be read up halfway through that deal. So you're essentially taking two people that you don't view highly, a first-round pick and an okay to solid wing, getting your point guard and actually not becoming a finals contender, but getting out of the first round. Russell Westbrook can't get out of the first round. Orlando Magic aren't going to get out of the first round. But together, teamwork makes the dream work, Noah. They can get out of the first round together and be relevant.
I like that a lot.
I'm telling you, man, as I wrote it, I'm like, just throw that out there. If they ask for Aaron Gordon or Jonathan Isaac, you just say no and you move on. But you throw that trade out there, you're giving OKC a first-round pick, something they're probably not going to get from a team outside of the Knicks, because Westbrook, that contract's not worth a first-round pick. Orlando's giving you one of them, and Orlando's saying, hey, you know what? We'll fix the point guard problem down the road. I'm not worried about that right now. We have Westbrook, Ross, Vucevic, Gordon, and Jonathan Isaac as a pretty crazy tall, long, athletic five that can shoot, that can play defense, two defensive pillars. I love it. So check that article out if you haven't.
I have an off question when you were talking about the potentially going to Houston. I really like this Magic. That would be a lot of fun to see that transpire. But us talking about pretty much a CP3 Russell Westbrook swap poised this question for me. Will CP3 ever win a championship? Like, even if he is traded to a team that would value him and could use him, will he ever help lead the charge to a championship as, like, one of the top two players?
I don't think so. I just don't. I mean, the time, his time, I don't want to say his time is gone, but hold on, I'm trying to trade. You could trade straight up Westbrook for Chris Paul because they have the same exact contract. I just looked up the trade machine. So, but where do you see Chris Paul winning? If it would not shock me if Houston just decides to run it back, because I mean, they've been Golden State's biggest threat in the West the past two seasons. And now Golden State's hindered, so why wouldn't they just trust Houston? This is your one time. You run this back and then you trade everyone when the contracts are a little more favorable in terms of years. So it's a great question. Will he do it? I don't know. But if he's healthy for this season, if Houston's healthy, if every team's at full strength, 100% full strength in the West, you won't say a contender's name until, I mean, Houston or Denver. Who are you favoring in a playoff series? Both teams are full strength.
Oh, man. I just don't trust Chris Paul, so I'd probably go Denver.
Okay, so you go Denver. So then you have him five or six, or will you go Golden State? How far are you pushing Houston down? Because I think it's the LA teams, Utah and Houston, in some jumbo of the top four.
Oh, no, I say that they're right at six, seven at worst.
Okay.
I don't think that's where they'll... But that's the thing. Regular season, they're going to be better because they win games in the regular season. It's just when it comes down to crunch time. I don't trust Chris Paul in the playoffs. Because why would I?
I mean, there's nothing...
He doesn't trust Chris Paul in the playoffs. Chris Paul doesn't trust Chris Paul in the playoffs.
And James Harden's not really the best either when it comes to the beacon of postseason success either. I mean, we've talked a lot of Rockets for the Rockets not being involved in anything. But back to Russell Westbrook. I'm glad you like the magic scenario I just laid out. The Heat would be fun as well. I don't really see another team. I'm looking at all the teams in the NBA. And none of them really make sense. And that's an interesting place to be as a consensus top 15, top 20 player. Three straight seasons averaging a triple-double. And the trade market is, we don't know what it is. And finding a logical solution that is not the Miami Heat or Orlando Magic is very difficult to find. And it sucks. There's no way around. I mean, no matter how you view Russ as a with his antics and stuff in terms of getting a crowd's face, celebrating, all that stuff, his pettiness, you could say. He's a character, and the NBA needs more characters. And he's a showman, and he plays 110%, 110 miles an hour all the time. And to see him in this pickle, to see him get this, he's going to have this stigma around him where people leave him. James Harden got traded. Kevin Durant opted to leave. Paul George, after having a big blowout last year with Nas coming in performing at a rap party, at a party for Paul George re-signing in Oklahoma City, he must have got a little bit and like, you know what? I want to cut this marriage short. I want to go back and live in L.A. full time. Sorry, Russ, I'm out. And now Russ is sitting there like the Will Smith Fresh Prince of Bel-Air guy. Well, Will Smith looking around, seeing no one in the... All the furniture's gone. No one's there. It's just him. And it sucks that Russ has to go through that.
I think whatever team he does end up with, assuming he does get shipped from OKC, because that's the only thing that seems logical at this point, I think they're going to get the best version of Russell Westbrook we've seen.
Mm-hmm.
Because a pissed off, coming for vengeance Russell Westbrook is the exact Russell Westbrook I want on my team. And I want him on my team because that team is like, oh, they believe in me. They actually want me here. All right, let's go destroy everyone else that didn't want me on their team. I feel like that's how his mental processing would work in that situation. Especially if he went to a team where he makes them an instant, kind of a top tier, tier two team in the East with either the Heat or the Magic. Arguably a tier one team by joining either of those teams.
That's something I actually I was thinking. So tier one, I feel like, is very clearly Milwaukee, Philly. After that, Boston has some question marks. We got to see how Kemba and the young guys step up. Indiana, Oladipo's coming off a major injury. We'll see how they can react without losing Bohan. Toronto just lost Kawhi, but Toronto will be good. Toronto will be really good. But then you're thinking of, when you're thinking of matchups, the seven I mentioned, Alfred Aminu's in there, the seven, eight players I mentioned on Orlando, that's a very good lineup. I think it goes those two. And then same thing out West. There's a jumbo of the Celtics if they've reached their peak, the Magic if they had Westbrook, the Heat if they had Westbrook would be all-time just pettiness between with Butler and Westbrook. There's just it just would add to the more parity throughout this whole NBA. And this is what Adam Silver envisioned. Smart teams, smart ownership, smart front offices, making intelligent decisions that help them now and better them in the future, and the rewarding organizations. Because besides the Lakers, because the Lakers are always a dumpster fire and they always seem to get anyone they want for the most part, except Kawhi. But they got LeBron, they got Anthony Davis. That's pretty solid in my eyes. But the Knicks are still a dump. Brooklyn, same exact city, doesn't tank. They had no reason to tank, but they don't tank. They build with a coach and a front office seamlessly working together for one common goal. Same thing happened with the Clippers. Starts up top, and now the Clippers and Nets were awarded with the top teams and with the top free agent talents, top free agent classes, and anyone can win the title. And that is an awesome thing to have in the NBA.
I'm really excited. I don't know. Is there anything else?
I mean, I think we're good. I mean, do you have anything else to talk about the NBA or sports in general? I mean, right now we're running 42. You're doing a production meeting mid podcast. We're at 42:40. We have 17 minutes left to do, but I don't want to force anything. If we can just re-record a whole thing for later in the week for Saturday. Well, this will be out tonight on July 7th. So
yeah, in terms of NBA, I don't really think. Who do you have coming out of the West right now? Are you still taking Lakers? I guess that's really the only last question I have.
If I had to predict the finals right now, I'd go Lakers, Bucks, or Lakers
76ers. You can't go or, it's one.
Lakers 76ers.
Jazz Sixers.
Interesting. And would I really bet against Giannis? Probably.
Jazz Bucks. Giannis, after a year of getting Kawhi taking it to him, yeah, I'll take a seasoned Giannis over a unproven Sixers team.
Your NBA Finals that you just predicted is literally my pipe dream that I've been trying to will into existence for about 6 years now. Jazz Bucks. I think the NBA would be happy with the Milwaukee side of things, not the Utah side of things. But on the other side of things, if they were to get Lakers Philly with LeBron and AD versus Joel Embiid, I think the NBA would be doing backflips. Either way, I think we're in the clear. I think Westbrook's the final basketball thing we talk about, and then it's football season.
It's finally time.
Indeed it is. And, you know, Noah, thank you for coming to the pod. We didn't even say beginning the Radio St. Pete Network. So we'll figure that out. Once again, production as we go.
Is this going up on Radio St. Pete?
There's a good chance it will. I mean, we can always find something to record about for an hour. But if not, thanks for coming. I'm tired, man. I'm losing. I have to cook after this, too. Thanks for coming in and talking, man.
Always, always good time. We're closing up one sports chapter of the wild 2018-2019 NBA season, plus its aftermath of free agency, but out with the old, in with the new. College football will be here before we know it. Your local high school football will be here before you know it. NFL season and preseason will be here before you know it, and fantasy football as well will be here before you know it. So I'm looking forward to it. That's an extreme understatement, but I'm looking forward to it.
And we'll have it all covered for you on here. We're going to try to go every angle possible to cover every angle of college football, NFL, fantasy, parlay. I plan on making some money. This even more money than I usually do in fantasy. Plan on making a little more money with the old college football stuff. Noah, thanks for coming again as usual. That's Noah. I am Michael Duggar. We are your host of the No Ordinary Pod on the Radio CMP Network, and thanks for listening. Hello, and I know you're hearing this on Radio St. Pete, and if you listen to the podcast as a whole, you're hearing me reintroduce the podcast 46 minutes in. Well, the reason we did that is because we recorded the Kawhi aspect, the Kawhi Leonard, Russell Westbrook, that giant podcast on Sunday night. Now we're finishing the last 15 minutes of this podcast, Wednesday, 6:28 p.m. on the dot. And Noah's still with me, and, you know, we're going to save our football content starting for next week. Next week's when we're going to start talking college, NFL, over-unders, all the fun stuff that everyone wants to talk about, what people really care about. But this last 15 minutes is for the nerds. It's for the people who love the rules, love the intricacies of how certain things are called and stuff like that. So what we're going to do is we're going to just talk about a couple things we changed, just a couple rules we'd like to change. And it could be in any sports. It just happens to be that we stuck with the sports we love. Noah wearing a Nebraska shirt as he went to class on Florida State's campus is always a comical thing. I love seeing people in just random shirts, university shirts, while they're attending Florida State or another university. But here's his college football. I have a couple basketball ones I want to go through. But the thing that prompted this is now that the NBA Board of Governors has approved coaches' challenges in the NBA. And instead of, you know, them throwing a flag on the floor, it's you call a timeout, a legal timeout, you do the circle, the review circle, and then the play gets reviewed. It's 2-point, 3-point field goals, shot clock violations, probably read it'd be a lot better.
Personal fouls, out of bounds plays, goaltending, or basket interference.
Yes, and this is a great change because now it gives the coaches a little more say in what they want to do. It can happen any time, but you're risking a timeout. If you don't have any timeouts, then you technical foul called, Chris Webber all over again, and the challenge is null and void. So the goaltending thing is a very quick segue. I'll talk one, you talk one, and then we'll go back and forth like that, 15 minutes, about 14 minutes now. So one I would do is pretty simple, and it's already in every single basketball league in the world except for America, United States. Goaltending. In the United States, NBA, and just our organization of basketball as a whole, if the ball is in the cylinder and you touch it offensively, defensively, it's goaltending. In FIBA, which is the Federation of International Basketball Association, I don't know if it's federal. Let's just go with that. They have a rule where if the ball is in the cylinder, a player can go and grab it. Not out of the hoop.
Slight interjection, just so people know what the cylinder is. That's just if you're looking directly above the rim, the ball is still in that circle that the rim creates.
Yes.
I know a lot of people sometimes get confusion on what the cylinder means exactly, because I just think of it as a big ring.
Yeah. If the ball is, any part of the ball is still in the circle that is where the hoop would fall. That's the best way I can describe it. After Noah, just to add on to that. So in FIBA, in the Olympics playing all this stuff, you can grab the ball off the cylinder, off of the rim. Say the ball's hanging, a bounce takes a high bounce and just hanging there. A player can go grab it instead of sitting around like a bunch of little kids waiting for something, like waiting for the ice cream truck, waiting for the ball to come down from the cylinder and grab the rebound or do whatever they need to do with it. That's just a quick rule. I feel like it makes sense to, you know, bring the United States and the NBA with the global game. And it's a cool aspect of it because then we don't get all these little tedious, you know, goaltending, basket interference violations. So that's my little riff about that. Noah, if you have anything to add on that, if you do, let's continue the conversation. If not, then let's go to college football, the world of college football, wherever you want to take us.
The only thing I got to add to that is it would just allow the athleticism that the NBA players have to just go up and get the ball and put it back down on the whether it's offensively and they're putting the ball back in the hoop, and it just is like, all right, best player, smartest player that was in best position can get the rebound, and then most the best athlete can try to go up and get the rebound. Because there were a lot of times this playoffs where that call kind of swung games back and forth. And I was watching with people, and I go, hey, that's goaltending. And they go, how's that goaltending? Like, it hit the rim and this and that. I go, it's still above. And whether I agreed with the rule, I understood the rule, and that's why it was called. I didn't think that it should have been that way because it seems more natural to just, like, once it hits the rim once, to just let it get put back down. But at the same time, what would that have done to the Kawhi Leonard shot that happened against the Sixers?
That's the thing. If there's a chance it would have got blocked. The shot heard
around the world, you know?
Yeah, the thing is, the thing about that is then do you then try to find a specialist whose job is to literally the second that ball goes is up in the rim, you're going to knock it out. But then if you do that and you mistime it, then it's offensive rebound right there to put back. Like, there's a lot of different ways with it. But I didn't even think about the Kawhi aspect of it, that shot. And you're right, it may take that shot away. But Jensen,
yeah, because that would have changed the whole course of where the NBA's at right now. If that shot doesn't go down, if the Sixers somehow beat the Raptors in that series,
a lot
who
of
knows
stuff
if
changes.
Kawhi's on the Clippers? That would have changed the entire NBA.
Golden State, I mean, there's a lot. I mean, Al Horford may not be on the Celtics. Jimmy Butler may have gone seven games against Milwaukee and said, you know what, I want to be here. I want to run this back. Milwaukee could have won the title. There's a lot of different ways. That's a great angle to think about. But, you know, here's the thing. Would you rather have a cleaner game, a more fluent game, where there's not these calls? Or would you rather have how it is right now and then, you know, that one, and then keep this one moment locked in the wave? Like, that one moment I feel like stands out more than anything, but, you know, it is. That's a great point, man. I can't get over that. Great job.
Yeah.
Thank you. All right. You ready to rant?
Pat myself on the back right there.
You ready to rant about some college football?
Yeah, pretty much always. But
not the first time you've ranted about this on this podcast either.
Really? Huh, that doesn't surprise me.
Go ahead. Sorry.
The rule change that I would go with is okay. Let me compare it to the NFL. In the NFL, for instant replay, everyone agrees that instant replay enhances the game. Until it draws the game out too long to where you're just like, all right, can I just watch the game or can I just play the game? Like, just let the call be what it is. But in the NFL, unless if the coaches get two challenges, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And those challenges can be used at any time except under 2 minutes. Under 2 minutes of the half, it has to go from the booth down.
Yes.
The other official has to call it down. That's not how it works in college football, and it's probably my biggest gripe with college football is I've watched college football games where the refs just aren't like as confident in what they're doing, it seems like, at times. And there'll be a play. It may have been called a catch when it wasn't a catch. It may have been a fumble when it wasn't or if turnovers are different, but mainly catches that are irrelevant. Like, I've seen 5-yard out routes that have been called a catch that were not a catch get sent up to that get buzzed down immediately because in college football, the coaches can they challenge?
Coaches can challenge.
Yeah, I think they get one challenge, and then if that's successful, then I think they get another.
But there's no reason for them to challenge because everything gets reviewed anyway.
Exactly, but it slows down everything, and literally everything gets reviewed. The amount of times I watch college football games, and it's been the most irrelevant 5-yard pass that does not change the course of the game in the middle of the second quarter. Like, just let the call be what it is. They only need 1 foot in bounds. If it's a turnover play, for sure, review it, because that changes the whole course of the game. But if it's just a basic play, either let it get played out or put it on the coaches to challenge the play. But there's way too much start, stop. And like even at FSU games when I wasn't a trainer and I was in the stands, like I would get annoyed. I'm just like, dude, it's hot out here. I'm burning up. They don't let me bring my water bottle in because it's metal and it's too, and you know, liquids and all that. And I'm just like, dude, it's hot. And then we're just delaying the game another 30, 45 minutes because of stupid reviews that have no substance to the game. So if I were to change one thing, I would say make it more towards the NFL geared than how they have it now, so that it doesn't take so much time out of the game, because NFL games, like NFL Sundays, are very consistent with their time. Mm-hmm. As in,
3 hours.
Games start at 1 o'clock Eastern. They're going to be 3 hours. We're going to have the afternoon games kicking off at 4:05, 4:25, and there's going to be very little overlap unless if a game goes to overtime. But who's complaining about free football? Not me.
Mm-mm, not I.
I'm complaining about prolonged football. Like, I don't want a football game to feel like a long baseball game.
Mm-hmm.
I want the action. Like, people go, oh, it's too long, too much time in between plays. And I go, yeah, when they're reviewing everything, I bet it feels that way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then again, it would make coaches be a little bit smarter with what they do. It would force coaches to make their players play smarter instead of just being like, hey, do this. They might actually teach them the game a little bit more, because there are a lot of times that they just ploy these athletes out there because they're just crazy, raw athletes. Mm-hmm. But they don't truly understand the game.
Yeah.
That's my biggest gripe.
How much do you think that is with... How much do you think that has to play in with the targeting rule? The extended of this. Because if there's any question, your head is down or you hit a defensive receiver, they're going to the review booth. They're going. And the fact that that's like a whole 45-minute discussion. The other side of the discussion is, how is we have all the technology and someone just can't walk out with a tablet? NFL's starting to do it a little more. Just walk out in the middle of the field with the tablet. This goes for the NBA too. You don't need 1,000 angles. You don't. You see it twice. You see it three times. You check the time. You move on. It's the same thing with football, but how much do you think the targeting is to play with the extending of the games? Because one more quick thing, sorry, is that I know that they stop the clock for first downs, which prolongs the game a little bit. There's a lot more touchdowns and scoring in this game. The play clock's is shorter. There's more passing in college. So I feel like those are factors. But there is constant complaining about the refereeing and the way they do things in college.
Well, don't get me wrong, I'm not ever going to complain about them trying to make the game safer for player safety, because they don't teach tackling as they used to, and there's a lot of spearing that goes on with the targeting. But, man, at some time, you just got to make the call. I just hate that the targeting rule is so dumb in college football, because you get called for targeting, they can't find these players like they do in the NFL. So what they do instead is, if you get a targeting in the first half, okay, you're kicked out the next half. You're done for the game. If you get targeting, there have been players that have gotten targeting calls in the third and fourth quarter of bowl games, like irrelevant bowl games, and then they have to miss the first half of the season opener. They're suspended the first half of the season opener because of the targeting call the year before. That is so dumb. That is so dumb.
I mean, there's the targeting rule in general needs to go. It needs to go, but we don't have that many. We don't have enough time to dive. I feel like next week we need to bring some positivity to the college football discussion, because we've been going for a couple months. We've just been ragging on with the pay, with all that stuff, NCAA football. But all right, we have a couple minutes. I just very quickly want to touch on these two NBA rules that go hand in hand. First one is the continuation rule. And you see a lot of clear path fouls. And clear path foul is, so say I'm on a fast break and say, Noah, you're guarding me, I'm on a fast break, and I have a clear path to the foul. Clear path to the basket, you reach out, you foul me. I get a free throw in the ball. That's the new rule. I'm saying to keep the flow going, try to find a way like there is in soccer, where if it's such as a cheap foul like that, where you're stopping a fast break, no, let the player keep going. The referee, at the referee's discretion, the player keeps going. We have these continuation rules when it comes to shots, where if the player was in a shooting motion before or after the contact, the referee can then say it's a shooting foul or not. Do the same thing with this. Except if it's not a shooting foul, let him get the free points, because all it keeps the speed of the game going and a lot of stuff like that. The other one I want to quickly bring up is, and we have about a minute or two to let you get that little feedback back, is let's bring back hand checking. Everyone talks about the 90s and the hand checking. A defender may not place and keep his hand on an opponent unless he is in the area near the basket with his back to the basket. You can touch him anywhere as long as not impede their movement. And I hear forever from old NBAs, man, there's no physical contact in this. Yeah, you go have fun watching people walk at a snail's pace, play no defense, and score 70 to 85. You have fun. I'll take the 120s, the 115s with these skilled players. But just to prove it, I think once a game throughout the season, bring the hand-checking rules back. Just as a test, even in summer league, in preseason, let's just see what this group of crop of players will look like with hand-checking. And interested to hear what you have to say about that.
I think it would just eliminate all the BS, like shooting fouls in particular that are called, just like, because I hate, like, I know it's a part of the game and it's a strategy, but I hate when there are players that have the ball and then they'll duck under and then they'll shoot up and then they'll shoot and then they get three free throws just off that. I know that's not necessarily hand check, but I think it would just make... I think it will show who's really got the best. Like, we don't see those jawing aspects that used to happen in the 90s, late 80s, early... Or, like, all
good
in the 2000s basketball. 20, you know, like, back and forth jawing on the court, which it doesn't necessarily need to be that intense. Mm-hmm. But I would like to see the fire and rage sometimes that could come with, like, all right, yeah, I'm not going to let you just get to the hole mm-hmm. so quick, so easily. And then it might, you know, it'll make players play smarter instead of just like, as I respect James Harden's play, but like he's the master just driving to the hole, getting one hand check, getting the foul, and getting two free throws, mm-hmm. and then he shoots 90% from the free throw line. Of course, he's just going to drain both of those most of the time.
Yeah, the main thing with the hand checking is that these guys can't survive hand checking. These guys can't do this. They can't do that. Do you know? And they try to like discredit it with LeBron. Do you know, are people aware LeBron 6'8", 270, 275 on a good day when he was at his peak Miami? He was 275. You think there's anyone in the 80s you think Byron Russell is going to stop him? You think Gary Payton? Come on. That's the thing that bothers me about this. Let's just see.
They need body checks to stop LeBron.
Yeah. And you still can't stop him. No one can stop LeBron. Prime Shaq, maybe. There's just a bunch of stuff. But that's all the time we have for today. I don't know how, I think we covered all the things we want to cover am I correct? Did you have any more written down? If you want to just quickly summarize?
No. We got my rant on college football. We got the new coaches challenge. We went over the NBA hand check, soccer continuation, and the over the rim bounce. So we covered it, bro.
The only thing I would say about all rules is please make colleges exactly like pros. Please, just the rules, just like the basics of it. The college basketball is moving a three-point line back. Still not to the NBA level, but still it's further back. College football, you get 1 foot in bounds. I can't stand that personally. I don't know how you feel. I hate it. Make it 2 feet. Groom them to make the pro product better. Just a quick thought. Don't know if you. I'll let you quickly rebuke that.
They're students, bro. They're not there to be make it to the pros. They're there to be student athletes.
Oh my god!
You need to understand that student first, athlete second, not alphabetical order. Student then athlete, GPA then weight room.
Well, hopefully next week we have some positivity towards the college sporting landscape. I don't know if we will. Shout out to Cabin Gelly and Terrence Mann, who are balling on the Clippers right now. They are monsters on the summer league. Terrence Mann was, I think, an assist shy of a triple-double. Come on. Mann and Cabin Gelly, you got a Clippers fan in me. You may get jerseys. There's a very good chance.
I'm definitely getting one of them.
All right, you get Mann, I get Cabin Gelly. We get the jerseys.
That works for me.
All right, we'll have some jerseys. We'll get some Clipper style merchandise going too, color wise. Don't want to cross any trademarks or all that stuff. But all right, Noah, my man, got this done Wednesday evening. You have yourself a phenomenal weekend.
Thank you, thank you. Gonna go start it off with some hot yoga. So
you're doing hot yoga. I'm picking up the old Broheim who's in town before he moved to the great outback. Golfing, family time, always great. Hey, everyone, enjoy your weekend. Thanks for checking us out on the Norrenay Pod, on the Norrenay Pod Network, and the Radio St. Pete Network.